Welcome to the Bromley Buzz podcast. My name is Darren Wheel, and today we're going back in time, but only after I've mentioned our sponsors, Terra Firma Landscapes and Ian Wood Property. Now, back to returning in time. We are on Bromley Radio presently, which is a locally based internet broadcasting station. But back in 2018, there was an earlier incarnation of Bromley Radio, and I recorded a podcast for them once as part of helping them to get moving. They didn't in the end, sadly. But in any case, the podcast was at Newstead Wood School, and it was with some of the students there, and with Joe Johnson, who is then MP in Orpington. So this kind of thing is just too good not to share again, because it's an insight into a point in time before COVID, before cost of living crisis, before lots of things have changed in politics. But it's also an insight into one of our members of parliament, and we've interviewed all of the current members of parliament in Bromley, and we want on the Bromley Buzz to continue to encourage people to understand and to participate in and to vote in politics, because it's important whoever you support. So here we are, Joe Johnson, MP, Newstead Wood Students, 2018. Welcome to the Bromley Radio podcast, and here we have Rachel Thornton from Newstead Wood School and Joe Johnson, MP for Orpington, who would like to have a chat.
So how did you get into politics?
Well, first of all, nice to be here. Great to be at Newstead and this lovely spring afternoon. I got into politics because I was a foreign correspondent for a long time before I went into politics. I was working for the Financial Times all over the world. I reported from 25 countries. And when I came back to the UK, it was about 2008, just as the financial crisis was hitting and just as Britain was tipping into what was going to be a very steep recession. And I saw then how important the quality of political leadership was to a country in a time of crisis. And I felt that with my experience in the world of finance and also having seen a lot of growth in many different countries around the world, I felt I understood something of the competitive challenges that Britain was facing. And I put myself forward to the Conservative Party, which at that time was looking for people from outside of politics to get into it and to change the face of the party. So I responded to a call that coincided with the expenses scandal of that era for new faces to come in and sort of refresh the party in Parliament. And it was on that basis that I was asked to put myself forward for Parliament.
So with your experience, what advice would you give to anyone wanting to get into politics?
Well, I think it's important to, you know, want to make a difference. So that's the first thing. It can't be about yourself. You know, it's got to be about the difference you want to make to the community you represent and also to the changes you want to make for the country as a whole. So you really have to have a passion for that. I think that's the first and most important thing.
Moving on to more national problems, is the government serious about the gender pay gap? And if so, what steps are being taken to tackle it?
Yeah, the government is very serious about the gender pay gap, and this month you're seeing a flood of companies produce their reporting on what the gender pay gap is within their own institutions. There is a requirement that government has put out for all companies with more than 250 employees to publish their gender pay gap by the end of this month. And that transparency, we hope, will be a spur to get rid of the remaining vestiges of the gender pay gap. It's obviously pernicious and it's against the law. The law has mandated equal pay for equal work for a very considerable period of time, and it's entirely right that companies do put their houses in order and bridge the remaining gaps that exist.
Are there any further steps the government is going to take apart from making companies release their money, returns?
Well, transparency is an important discipline. Government will be looking carefully at the steps that companies are taking and see whether there's a case for further action at that point.
Okay. Given that it is now compulsory for children to stay in education until 18, why doesn't the government heavily subsidise those students, given they might have to travel a long way?
Well, the government has put in place mechanisms to ensure that discounts are available for 16 to 25-year-old travel. So if you're within that age group, you can buy a travel discount card, which gets you about a third off your travel. So that is one way in which government contributes. Local authorities are required to make an assessment of the cost of travel for their populations. They're not required to provide subsidies and so forth, but they are required to make an assessment of that need. Government recognises that it can help, and it's recently contributed an additional £180 million for a bursary, a 16 to 19-year-old bursary fund, which young people can apply to for various needs, for various purposes, if they're facing financial difficulties. And normally the sums involved under that bursary scheme are worth about £1,200, some of which could be used for travel purposes.
Moving more into education and defence, given that we're going to be spending many billions of pounds over the next 50 years on defence programmes such as Trident, wouldn't this money be better spent on education, for example, free university places for all?
Well, they're not necessarily mutually linked, those two areas. I mean, it is important that we have a well-funded armed forces. That's why, you know, we're committed as a country to spending 2% of our gross domestic product each year on our armed forces. That's the NATO level of expenditure, which we are committed to meeting. That doesn't mean, of course, that we don't also want world-class higher education, and we do. We've got a fantastic university system in this country, and I bet, you know, the vast majority of students at Newstead Wood are going to go on to our great universities. Now, it's entirely right that students who go on to benefit from that higher education that's on offer also make a contribution to the cost of higher education. And that's why, as a government, we believe it's right that students do pay some of the cost of their higher education through the payments that they will make once they're earning above £25,000 towards the cost of the tuition that they benefited from.
Is your government actively helping to combat the Yemen crisis, and if so, what are you doing?
Yeah, Britain is in the lead when it comes to aid, developmental aid and assistance to Yemen. It's obviously a terrible conflict there, and we wish it came to a speedy conclusion. But Britain is playing its full part, using the money which we spend on international development to try and bring relief to the communities that are affected by that conflict. And I think we are contributing the third most of any country anywhere in the world in terms of international humanitarian assistance.
Given that at 16 I am able to join the army and get married, why is the government not seriously considering lowering the voting age, especially with things like filibustering to make sure the vote doesn't happen?
Well, look, I understand why this is a subject close to many people's hearts here. And it's great that, you know, you've got such an active political society at Newstead. I think in this country we take the view that adulthood and attaining adulthood and maturity is a process rather than a single event at one particular point in time. And different definitions of adulthood and maturity apply to different aspects of all of our lives. So we use different points in time for different things, and I'm probably going to get some of this wrong, but I think I'm right in saying you can't leave home, for example, without your parents' consent until you're 17 and so forth. So there are different ages at which you know, we deem people to have reached a certain level of maturity. And we would be, you know, in terms of the European context, something of an outlier if we moved to a right to vote at the age of 16. Within the EU 28 countries, there are, I think, only two countries that at present offer a vote in the general election to 16-year-olds, and Austria and one other is momentarily escaping my memory. So we would be something of an outlier. We believe that attaining adulthood is a process rather than an event, and it's right to look at each sort of aspect of how maturity develops on its own terms.
What's your favourite thing about Orpington?
Orpington's got so much to commend it. I mean, it's got the best of both worlds. It's got the best of London in the sense that, you know, you're within spitting distance of all the excitements of one of the world's great cities. And it also has the attractions of being close to you know, the countryside. You know, half of the Orpington constituency is green belt. It has that sort of Kentish feel to it. It's green, it's clean, it's near the rolling hills of the Downs and so forth. So it's really got the best of the world.
I know that you already touched on Yemen with Rachel. I was just going to, is it not a bit controversial to say that we are determined to defend humanitarian rights, which I completely agree with, in reference to Yemen, but we, I believe we sell fighter jets to Saudi Arabia? So I was just wondering like how that coincides with each other.
Well, we are supporting the humanitarian relief effort in Yemen, and we're determined that, you know, people in Yemen who are affected by this conflict get some support from us as the UK, and I'm proud that we are, as a country, in the lead in terms of helping provide humanitarian relief. Clearly it's a terrible conflict and we would want it to come to an end as rapidly as possible, and I know that those sorts of messages were very much shared with the leadership of Saudi Arabia during the recent visit by the Crown Prince.
I was just going to ask as well, why do you think that the younger generation should become conservatives, or what do you think is attractive about the Conservative Party?
Well, look, I'm not here in a school. I'm not here in a school to give party political messages. But what I would say is that this government and the Conservative coalition that preceded it have had a strong record in terms of employment, and I think there is really nothing more important to young people than their job prospects. And we're now in a situation where we've got unemployment at its lowest level ever. We've got employment at its at its highest levels ever. And there are jobs and opportunities in young people, for young people in this country, in a way which is really critical for their futures. And I think a good part of that is due to the fact that we've had a series of chancellors of the Exchequer and prime ministers committed to stabilising our economy after the financial crisis, putting our public finances back in order, often taking very difficult decisions in the process, many of which will not have been popular across the country, but that have done the job in terms of putting us back on an even keel and stabilising our economy, giving businesses the confidence that they need to invest and create opportunities for young people. So if there were a reason, a single reason I had to give why you should vote Conservative as a young person, is because your employment prospects and your futures are going to be much better with the Conservatives than with any other party.
I just wanted to ask, like, what are the Conservatives doing to combat homelessness in single males? Because I feel like they are the most vulnerable, and they are lower down when it comes to priorities for housing, because they're not like single mothers with children.
Homelessness is a problem, and it's absolutely right that we have a strong focus on it from Sajid Javid, who's the Secretary of State for Communities, Housing and Local Government. You know, no one wants to see people living rough on the streets, and the government is determined to stamp out this scourge, and you would have heard him and the Prime Minister set out some demanding and challenging objectives to eradicate it over the coming years.
Well, I hope you enjoyed listening to Joe Johnson from 5 years ago now. And that is about it for this episode. And you look forward to joining us in future episodes of the Bromley Buzz.